Welcome to Gal Pals Watch. I'm Alicia.
I'm Sarah.
And this is a podcast where we discuss queer women in films inclusively defined.
Indeed.
Yeah. And today we're talking about one of my favorite films. It's called Foxfire.
Yes.
And it's from 1996.
A classic time. I had never even heard of this movie before you suggested it. And I watched it literally this morning.
Yeah.
And I was honestly kind of dreading it because I feel like I have a little bit of like iffy feelings about stuff from the 90s most of the time now, especially stuff that has no nostalgia value for me because I didn't see it at the time. But
that's fair.
And you were like, I think you'll like this movie, and I was like, we'll see. But I actually did really like it.
That's honestly very fair to be like, I feel sus about this.
Yeah.
Because honestly, not a lot of stuff like ages very well, and sure. You know, this had its moments too, but I think it really is like a snapshot of what it was like to probably be a teenager in Portland, Oregon in the 90s.
Yeah. You know, at the very beginning I was like, oh, it's so rainy here, is it Seattle? And then I was like, oh no, it's Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of cool. I feel close to Portland.
Yeah, it's still a lot of Pacific Northwest vibes for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so the info for this movie, we have it directed by Annette Hayward Carter, written by Elizabeth White, and it stars Heidi Barres, or Hedy Barres, as Maddie, Angelina Jolie as Legs, Jenny Lewis as Rita, Jenny Shimizu as Goldie, and Sarah Rosenberg as Violet.
Yeah. Many of those people are real legends.
Mm-hmm.
I love Jenny Lewis.
Yeah.
She's awesome. She just did so much from the time she was a tiny child, and now she's like a wonderful musician. I love her music.
Yeah, we get to hear her sing a little bit in this, which is really sweet because what's the band she's in?
She was in Rilo Kiley.
That's what it was.
But that band is no more.
Okay.
She's had a solo career for a while since then, I think. Mm-hmm. She's mostly on her own, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but from the early aughts days, yeah, I definitely remember her from Rilo Kiley.
Yeah.
Yeah, she has a really unique voice, and it's awesome. Yeah, it's really cool to see. I've seen Heidi Barres in a couple of different things, like usually stuff on TV where she's like a bit part, usually the Emmy award winning episode or something of that series, that's the super troubling thing.
Oh, yeah.
She's like that character. Obviously, Angelina Jolie is big. And Jenny Shimizu is also, huge.
And they had a thing in the 90s, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they met on this film.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. And like part of, why I wanted to do this movie is just like queer lore, right? It's like...
yeah, it's not really very explicitly queer. I was actually reading an interview from March of this year. Did you read that on Autostraddle with the director? It's like a long
interview.
And it was so interesting. And she said that they made her cut a kiss scene.
Yeah, I read that too.
Yeah, which was interesting. I mean, not very surprising, but nothing explicitly queer is happening in this movie really, but it is like so gay. And not in like a campy way, it's like in a very genuine way, I feel like.
Yeah, this movie like reminds me of that saying, not gay as in, or not like queer as in gay, but queer as in fuck you. Like, I feel like that's what this movie really is.
That's such a good slogan for this. Yeah.
And it's really funny because, like, I remember reading some sort of synopsis. I can even, like, even when I looked it up online, it was, like, really silly. It was like they're learning about lesbianism or something. What? And I was like, this makes zero sense. Because they don't learn about lesbianism. No,
they really don't. That's not the point of this.
Yeah. This one's a little bit better. It says five high school girls turn the tables on a teacher who makes sexual advances, but the principal punishes them instead. In order to get her confiscated art supplies, Maddie Wirtz and her friends, including the Fearless Legs and the Disturbed Goldie, sneak into the school, leading to an accidental. That's a too in-depth one.
Detailed.
Yeah.
Analysis.
Yeah, that's very detailed. I would say basically this girl gang takes revenge on sexual predators.
Yeah. Yeah, sort of. I feel like it's also definitely got some chaotic energy. Like, it starts out and none of them are actually friends, but then the Jenny Lewis character, they call her Red, but I can't remember her actual name.
Rita.
First of all, the beginning of the movie where they're in science class and like about to cut open live frogs was so intense. And this teacher was like, he was truly the shittiest of the shit shits.
Yeah.
Being just like breathing down her neck, telling her to do it. And she was like, I don't want to do it. And then it comes to light very quickly that he is being a gross, disgusting human man. inhuman man.
Yeah.
And basically assaulting this character. And she's not the only one. And she's kind of crying about it in the bathroom. This Angelina Jolie character shows up out of nowhere. And then she just goes, I don't even go here.
Which, like,
it's such a classic 90s line.
And it reminded me, of course, of like Mean Girls. Like,
oh yeah,
she doesn't even go here. Yeah. But yeah, it's like, it is so classic. Legs just is a transient teenager, and just like I kind of love the idea that she's just like walking into random high schools across the country and like wreaking some havoc.
Yes, amazing. I mean, also this movie was made like right around the time of Columbine, and they have like the security guard at the high school and they have the metal detector.
That's true. I was surprised by that, honestly, because I forgot when Columbine happened. It happened 3 years later, which was like,
Columbine was after this.
It was three years after, but I still thought it was really interesting because I was like, oh, I guess like had high schools across the country all just always had metal detectors, and maybe this like Columbine didn't, but maybe in like bigger cities they did.
Did your high school have one?
No, I went to a private high school.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if it's different now, but I think there are so many entrance points that that would be difficult to guard, but they probably might have changed that. You know, you could only enter through a set of doors and that kind of stuff, but I know in my sister's high school, it was that way. You had to, and she's 10 years older than me, so she would have been going to high school around the same time. So I don't really know why I was surprised, but I guess, I don't know.
I guess we kind of think of Columbine as like
the first
one, but it probably wasn't. I don't know.
Yeah. Or like maybe the one that's not within like I don't know. A bustling city or something.
Yeah.
I have no idea. So
Okay, she... so they wreak revenge, sort of, on this teacher guy. They, like, all confront. So it's Rita and Maddie sort of just comes into the bathroom, and Legs is there. There's some other cheerleader girls who are like, yeah, right, he's not doing any of that stuff. And then another girl who has a reputation for being a quote-unquote slut. and she says, well, he's doing it to me too. And, you know, there's some slut shaming that goes on there. And then they decide to sort of ambush him. So they send Rita in to be alone with him in the classroom, and he starts being gross, and they, like, kind of attack him, like, physically.
Yeah. So because Rita won't dissect the alive, very much alive frog, which
it's
makes
so fucked up.
Did you have to dissect a frog when you were in high school?
I honestly don't remember. I don't think so.
I did, but they were dead.
They were not alive.
They for sure were not alive. Yeah. Exactly. And I'm like, I don't really think this happens very often.
I really hope not.
That seems fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, she gets detention because she won't do it. She doesn't want to do it. Yeah. When they're in that bathroom scene, I thought it was super interesting that, like, Maddie comes to Rita and Violet's defense. Mm-hmm. Then Legs is, like, calling everyone an asshole.
Yeah.
And she's like, you're a bunch of assholes for letting him get away with it.
Yeah.
And it was just, like, so ridiculous. But she does kind of inspire them and give them the strength to, like, stick together and do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they attack him, and it is a spectacular moment. And it was so ridiculous because, like, Goldie just is not even a part of this, wasn't even in the bathroom, but just kind of, like, stumbles in out of nowhere, like, whoa, fight.
Yeah. She's like, wow, cool.
It's like, oh, got him.
This brand new girl gang that just formed out of this moment.
Yeah. And so they kind of, like, all run out after this event, and they all kind of, you know, bond after that, and they all decide to, like, I don't even know if they go to, like, hang out together. But I thought it was so funny.
Where... They go home at first, because then, like, Legs comes over to Matt's house, because she knows where she lives, because she picked up a notebook she dropped in the classroom, and apparently that had her address in it. And she shows up just like Edward Cullen in the night. comes into the window. By the way, I love how whenever they're, like, inside a room somewhere, outside it's just, like, sheets of rain, like, it's not just, like, gray or drizzly, it's, like, waterfall level rain on the windows.
It's Which true.
Incorrect for most Pacific Northwest rainy days, but
yeah.
Okay. It sets a tone, I guess.
Yeah, I love the way that in that scene that Legs, the way she talks to Maddie. Like, so she's creepily on her roof, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, trying to find her bedroom, realizes it's, like, in the attic-ish area. So creepy. And she's like, Maddie, sweetheart, did I scare you?
Yeah.
It's just like, yes, of course you did.
Random.
But, like, Maddie kind of, like, sees her out the window and is, like, kind of, like, has kind of, like, a smirk on her face. Like, she's excited that Maddie's there. And clearly, like, there's some sort of connection there.
Mm-hmm.
And Maddie's feeling very sexually confused or excited.
Oh yeah, her boyfriend, by the way, is played by Peter Facinelli.
Oh yeah,
who I know mostly from Can't Hardly Wait, which I'm embarrassed to admit was, like, my favorite movie when it came out.
Nice.
Oh god, that's really embarrassing to admit, but you know what, it was a different time, I was a different person.
Yeah, and he's, like, he's a pretty good guy in this, like, he doesn't say or do much, but you know,
pretty small.
Yeah, he's an artsy type. he's like taking pictures with Maddie in the beginning, and he's all naked and like next to like all this like nature.
Ivy, yeah.
Yeah, all the ivy and,
ivy and chasing a Polaroid down the river.
I felt like it was a good switch, because mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of women were put into those roles and they like have they clearly have like a healthy relationship, but mm-hmm. there's something that Maddie's just kind of like maybe bored, and then Lex comes in and is like, this is different.
Yeah,
I feel like there are a lot of classic lines in this. Mm-hmm. From that scene, Maddie's like, "Where do you live?" And Lex goes, "Mostly in my head."
Yeah, I love that one. Angelina Jolie in this movie was like truly just a baby version of the character she played in Girl Interrupted. There was so much similarity. And like, Girl Interrupted was one that I saw when it first came out, and that was definitely part of my queer awakening with Jolie's character.
I agree.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. I'm sure if I watched it now, I'd be like, ooh, that's very problematic. But at the time, I was like obsessed with it. And this is very much similar vibes, where she's kind of like this bad girl, but she has a heart of gold. She's very complicated, but she has a lot of trauma, and it's portrayed in this very specific way that I think Angelina Jolie especially like kind of played that kind of character a lot in the beginning of her career.
She kind of has the same energy when she's yelling, like when Legs gets mad in this. And there's like a laugh that she does when she's on the bridge that reminded me of her role in Girl Interrupted, that like really like creeped me out. Yeah. Because it really is like this. I feel like these people could be the same, like those two characters could be the same person. Yeah. Just one, like Legs somehow made it all the way to Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And
got hospitalized for psychosis or whatever it was that she was in there for.
In the 60s. Like, I don't know. Yeah. But
she traveled, and then she got older, and then she the book that this movie is based on is set in the 50s, so
yeah, which I thought was really interesting. I tried to read it a very long time ago. Okay. And it just wasn't for me. But I don't know why it wasn't for me. Maybe because I was just like not ready emotionally to read it, but I like loved the movie, so I was like, I'll read the book. But yeah, it's set over 3.5 years in the book, whereas this is just a couple of weeks, maybe.
Yeah, I was like, there's no way this is 3.5 years.
No way.
More than a couple of weeks, because
goes
to juvenile detention for like 6 months.
True.
It's like maybe a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the book, Legs is like still kind of like the leader. They seek revenge on a math teacher who's taken an inappropriate interest in Rita, which is the same. Mm-hmm. They start with vandalism, and then they get more violent, which also similar. Yeah. But then there's also kidnapping in that book.
There's kidnapping in the movie.
Oh yeah, true. Goldie's dad.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Goldie is an interesting character. I feel like she's the only character who's not white, and she is not given, I feel like, a lot of depth. And her character is addicted to drugs, like hard drugs, like heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like the way that was portrayed was very 90s, like after school special thing. I don't know. What did you think about Goldie's character and her portrayal and her role in this?
I thought it was very flat. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see more of Goldie. I would say she was about as flat as Violet's character. Violet is the quote unquote slutty character.
Yeah.
I would say next up would be like Rita. We got a little bit more into like a little bit into her home life and like her love life. Goldie, we see her home life. But then it's mostly, what'd you say?
Yeah, I was just saying that it's really abusive, and that's sort of in the narrative of the movie, the justification or the reason why she has become addicted to drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like she's maybe, you know, into like smoking marijuana or something, or taking like lighter drugs recreationally, yeah. And or like drinking or something like that. Right. But when Legs leaves, it sounds like that's when she started turning to harder drugs and heroin specifically. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she's always had an abusive household, it seems. Yeah. She's adopted.
Mm-hmm.
But even like that is not explained.
Yeah.
You just assume because she has white parents. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's, it was just a little flat, and she just seemed to be kind of like a party animal.
Yeah.
Kind of trope character.
Yeah. I mean, the first scene you see her in, she's in the bathroom passed out on a toilet, like mm-hmm. with her face on the toilet. And like as if she'd been throwing up. And yeah, I just feel like I just love Jenny Shimizu, or I don't know how to pronounce her last name.
Shimizu. Yeah, I think that's right.
Shimizu. Yeah, I just love her, and I wish that she like had more of a deep character in this movie. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I wish she had, there was more to the character, because even later when there is the scene where Legs basically has the whole gang like take her dad hostage, to get him to pay for rehab or something like that. I don't even know. But Rita accidentally shoots him like in the shoulder. It's not something like vital. Mm-hmm. But Goldie is like really upset that it happened. And it's kind of like, I mean, I understand like the complicated dynamics of having like an abusive parent mm-hmm. and like still caring about them as a parent, but it just didn't seem to like click to me, mm-hmm. like why she would care so much. Yeah.
Plus she was actively in withdrawal, which is why they went to get him in the first place, because she was so sick and like they were like, she needs more help than we can give her.
Like, yeah, they were nervous she was gonna die.
Yeah. I love how they just kind of live out this fantasy of there's just this abandoned house by the river, and they just squat there and they just like become a family there. And there's this epic scene that if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about, where they're like tattooing, or Angelina Jolie is stick and poke tattooing all of them on their boobs.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible.
It is incredible. It's, I like
love that scene.
It's one of the most like beautiful scenes in any movie I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's set to Mazzy Star's Into Dust, and it literally goes, and that's a long ass song, and it plays the whole song. And like it's so slow and like moving, but like so pivotal, and it tells so much story without saying like less than 10 words mm-hmm. in that whole 7 minutes. And it's just like, that shit's like epic storytelling. I loved it. Loved it so much. Yeah, that was definitely, this movie was another one of my like gay awakenings where I was like, whoa. And not just because like boobs, but because like the connection that like women can have with each other. It was just like, it blew my mind.
I really wish that I had seen this when it came out, because I guess I was probably like, oh, I'm so old. I was like 11
mm-hmm.
it came out, probably 10 or 11
mm-hmm.
Depending on when in the year.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the other thing, is that like it apparently flopped because MGM was like about to go bankrupt or running out of money, or the film division of it was.
Yeah.
It was also coming out the same weekend as or it was playing the same time as Twister was playing, and that was like this giant huge movie, and mm-hmm. like there was no marketing, and so it just like went to some art houses. And in that interview with the director, she was saying how she wanted the audience to be teenage girls who go to malls, and she was like, yeah, teenage girls who go to malls don't go to art house theaters. It didn't like reach its intended audience like at all.
Yeah, they said it was supposed to be like a spring break film where it's like, you know, look at what these crazy girls got up to. And like, basically it was supposed to target when teenagers would be out of school and teenagers would flood the theaters yeah. because they had nothing else to do, but mm-hmm. it got totally bungled and came out on the same weekend as Twister, which I like this. I honestly think this could have been like huge.
I wish it was, because then I might have seen it and then my whole life might have been different.
But I think it's still like, it's become a cult classic within like fear the queer and feminist
Montos fear
the fear circles, which I'm really proud about. I don't know why I'm like so proud of this movie, but it just like, it makes me so happy. And I remember when I first saw it, I was probably like 14, 15. And I wanted Maddie's room so bad.
It's a really cool room.
It's so cool. In the book, Maddie's like an astronomer's assistant.
What?
Yeah. So like they tied in like that spaciness to her room, so that's why her room's just like covered in those awesome 90s glow in the dark stars. I mean, also just because it's the 90s, but I think that's like, you know, one way that they were like paying homage to the book too.
Cool.
Yeah,
also, you become an astronomer's assistant when you're in a high schooler in the 50s.
Like, how does that even happen?
Oh, sounds cool though. I'd do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it's really cool. And they essentially, what happens is the girls are found out that they have totally beaten up this teacher.
Oh yeah, I skipped way ahead.
No.
The school suspends them because he's an asshole too.
Because he's an asshole, yeah. First of all, when do we ever stay like...
True, we never do.
There's no timeline. There's no real timeline on this podcast. Welcome. And yeah, so they get suspended for like 3 weeks, which I feel like would never happen nowadays. Like, you either get expelled or you have like in-house suspension. I don't know of like any time where like a kid just can be like not in school anymore for like, they're just like seeing it 3 weeks. Yeah. And they all somehow keep it from their parents.
Yeah.
Which I was like, so unrealistic, and I love it. Oh my god, they have like such fun, like there's such great moments in here. Like they of course all the stuff in the house, but then they also like go out to this like Tai Chi place or something, yeah. And they're watching people do Tai Chi, and Jenny Shimizu's character Goldie says this is like a bad tampon commercial. And it's interesting, during their time off from school, like when they do interact with the people from their school, their classmates, like they're mostly getting like cheers. They're like, oh my god, I'm so excited, you know, thankfully someone did something to Mr. Buttinger. Mm-hmm. Except for the football team,
right? Because he's also football, the coach,
because he out. Yeah, because he's a coach, the football team's pissed, blah blah blah.
Yeah
so they get that becomes some conflict later on. Mm-hmm. Basically what happens is Cindy, who's one of the cheerleaders that was in the
the bathroom
in the beginning, her boyfriend, who's like on the football team, is all pissed, and they decide to get back at the girls by basically like kidnapping one of them. And I think they were planning to rape them. Which is like so incredibly fucked up. Mm-hmm. And they have Cindy basically like lure them in.
Yeah.
And she is, you know, she regrets it, right as her boyfriend's about to, you know, turn the corner in their car, in his car. She's like, you should probably leave, which was nice of Cindy to do, but it didn't
better
work.
If she just
didn't do it
at all. But I mean, obviously the real culprits are the disgusting men
dudes. I mean, it doesn't work out that way,
luckily, but that's how things sort of fall apart, because then like Legs and I think all the others actually, they show up, they like kick the boys out of the car and then they steal the car, and then they there's like a chase, like a police car is chasing them, and then and Legs is driving and Maddie keeps being like, we can explain this, just pull over. And of course she's like, because she has a mysterious past that probably has a lot of trauma that we never find out about, she's like, I don't like police. And so she just drives and drives, and then she flips the car over.
They go off this like ravine almost, like, and that was one of the moments where I was like, ooh, this reminds me of the Girl Interrupted character, where it's just like, there's no rational thought right now, like, because she's in complete trauma mode. We don't know what happened, but we can only assume that, you know, this teenager who's transient has definitely seen some shit. We do know a little bit.
We like find her court.
What was in there? I forgot.
Well, we find out that she tells Maddie earlier on that her mom died in a car crash.
When she was drunk driving.
And then when they're in court, after they've presumably been arrested or whatever, after they flipped this car, stole the car and totaled it, and they're all perfectly fine physically, but they send her to juvenile detention because she doesn't have a legal guardian. That's which is also like really unrealistic, because if she didn't have a legal guardian and she wasn't 18, which I guess she could have been, I don't know, they don't say, but assuming she's a minor like the other ones, they wouldn't just like then release her after 6 months with nothing, right? Like, I don't know, maybe they would, but I think at that point, if you're a minor, you like have to be in some kind of
the care of an adult,
legal relationship with the state.
A ward,
whatever,
a ward of the state somehow. I wonder if it's because she might have had a record, and then this was kind of like a almost like a three strikes rule, where it was like, okay, well, you go to juvenile detention,
right?
Because sometimes depending on the state and depending on the severity of the crime, kids are just put in kid jail, which is like fucked up.
I know, it's true, but they just sent the other ones home with their parents. The judge was like, your parents probably know what's best for you more than I do. And I was like, how often would that happen in real life?
Yeah, absolutely. And basically the only reason Legs ends up going to jail is because Cindy lies on the stand. And I don't quite remember what she says, but basically she does not cop to the fact that it was all like a plan to rape them. They shouldn't have stolen the car and totaled it, but they were running away from danger. So
she does come clean to the judge later on. But I don't think it makes any difference in terms of, or does it? Does she get out early? She gets out early.
She gets released basically right away.
Okay, so maybe it's not that long of a timeline that the movie takes place over. Anyway,
I think you're still right. It's probably closer to like 6 months and like the couple weeks that I said. And there's also this, I want to reverse a little bit. There's this like pivotal scene where right before all this happens, Legs is, I don't know, I like to think that she does this a lot, where she just like goes into town by town and just like finds a girl gang and like changes their lives. Because she's like, I'm gonna be leaving soon.
Yeah.
And Maddie is like upset, and she says, can I go with you? Or she said something like, can someone go with you?
And yeah, or like
says,
you want to go alone, or could someone come with you or something?
Yeah. And Legs is like, is that someone sure?
Yeah.
That they want to leave. And Maddie says, if I told you I loved you, would you take it the wrong way? And then Legs says, what do you mean wrong? And then she says, just that I'm not, and you're, and like a, like basically saying, you are a gay and I'm not a gay. And, but Legs says, I'll take it however you want me to, Maddie. And that's where I believe they were supposed to kiss, because they get close together. They touch each other's faces.
That's and such a
man. Yeah. And they like, Maddie like hovers her hand over Legs' lips. And then she rests her head on her shoulder. Yeah.
And that's where I also assumed where the kiss scene was before they took it out.
Yeah. So I read a different article from 2021 that said basically similar. That, and that's where it was. That's basically where it was. It was on the roof. And yeah, they cut it out because they were like, oh, this is gonna be, it's too much. It won't sell. We'll get backlash for it. But then the next year, the same guy, one of the producers, came to the director and said, we made a mistake, because Ellen DeGeneres came out the next year in 97. And they were like, it probably would have been fine. And we would have been like revolutionary.
Yeah.
But basically it all came down to like profit at the end, you know. Yeah, they were like, what's going to be more beneficial for us? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so ridiculous. But that's like one of the gayest parts of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
For being like, to not have anyone actually kiss in this movie, it's like the gayest fucking movie I've ever seen.
So true. Yeah.
Yeah, and basically the rest of the movie is like the whole Goldie's dad scenario. Yeah. So like Goldie is heavily in drugs. They try to bust her out of
The drug den under the bridge.
The drug den under the Portland Bridge.
Oh my god.
The Portland Bridges.
So 90s.
Yeah.
Everything about it. Just yeah. The bridge is also important, because like in the beginning, morning after Legs spends the night at Maddie's, Maddie like follows her as she's walking across this bridge, and she has, as we've talked about, kind of this erratic behavior, or this sort of like quote unquote bad girl behavior that is part of this persona that I think she's trying to like make for herself. And she, I think it's the Broadway Bridge, she climbs up the iron, whatever the heck it's called, I don't know the terms, but it's like the top of the bridge. She climbs up and she's just like acting dumb up there. Like she's like stolen the art bag, and she's just sort of like dancing around up there, and then she drops she drops it, and it gets stuck on the edge of the bridge. And so she comes down and she gets it, but the whole time Maddie's like really scared, which you know, for good reason. Very easy to die in both of those ways.
Yes,
on top of the bridge and like hanging off of the bridge. But it becomes this moment where they like bond more deeply for the first time, I think. And I was reading in that interview too with the director that apparently when they were like shooting that scene, Angelina Jolie went up there without her like safety harnesses or whatever, and was like acting crazy.
I believe that.
And the producers were like, you need to come down.
And she's like, ha 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 ha. Yeah, absolutely. 100% see that. Yeah, and then at the end, Maddie climbs up that bridge by herself.
Yeah.
And after throughout,
Legs gets on a truck that she's hitchhiked onto and driven.
Yeah. Yeah. And in that moment, like, Maddie's trying to figure out, like, when they're together the last time she and Legs are together, like, will I join her? And mm-hmm. Legs just says, like, you'll know when the truck comes by, you'll know. Mm-hmm. And she basically breaks it to Legs and by just saying, I'll never forget you.
Yeah.
And Legs starts crying but understands, and she just says, you're in my heart, and she leaves.
I liked that scene.
Yeah, me too. It was like,
I feel like they both did such a good job acting it.
Absolutely. And there's also like some light exposition, like narrative stuff happening, or narration with Maddie. So when she goes up on that bridge, she says that was the last time she ever saw Legs. And she had seen the rest of the girls from that group, like from time to time since, but you know, they have reunions, but they're not like good friends, or anything. And it's just, it's really interesting, and it's a nice, it wraps it up very nicely.
I agree. I think even though in some ways it feels kind of abrupt to like just have it be like a quick where are we now type of narration that's like 15 seconds at the end. On the other hand, it does feel like a good place to stop it. And I like what she said about like when we meet, we do embrace. Because we're kind of veterans of a sort. And I don't know, for some reason that just hit me where I was like, yeah, I mean, being in high school is kind of intense. And like, obviously it was embellished a lot from what a lot of people experience in this movie, like played up. But I don't know. I think it's like, it's so emotional, especially when you have such close relationships with, I don't know. There's something about girl relationships in high school that is just so intense sometimes, or just when you're young and coming of age. And
yeah, even without like the trauma bonding, there's just like, well, like to the extent that they do in this film, it's just like, yeah, there's a lot of shit that happens in high school. And yeah, like.
And everything feels so much more big.
Absolutely.
And you're going through puberty and like at other times in your life, I think.
Yeah. I really loved the narrative, or the, I should keep saying that, the narration throughout the film. It's very light, but it really captures like honestly like the queerness of it, I feel like.
I agree.
There's one part in the beginning where right after Legs leaves and she says, let me even go here.
Yeah, I love that line so much.
And she's, or before she even comes in, you hear Maddie say, I felt it before I knew it.
Yeah,
and it wasn't over, I could feel it. And it's just like, oh my god, this is like the gayest shit,
truly.
I just am so obsessed. Also a couple of like bonus things. I saw an Inside the Actor Studio with Angelina Jolie.
Oh my gosh.
And the tattoo scene was like sort of improvised. Okay. And in the sense that like it was scripted that like this thing was going to happen. But it seems like it didn't have like a set order. Per an interview with Angelina Jolie, she says, we hadn't been naked in front of each other and everybody's got their own issues. And yeah, to kind of be the first one to be bold and to take your shirt off and start, and everybody's, you know, and the other girls, and you look around at your friend and the other one takes hers off. There was something very sensual, but really we found each other looking into each other's eyes and saying, it's okay. I'm with you. You're beautiful, and stay with me. Don't be shy.
Aww.
So it seems like a really like safe and inclusive thing. And there are three of the girls who get totally topless, but then there are two that like keep their tops on, which I was like, yeah, it's just this very like do what you need to feel safe moment.
Yeah. Just, like,
unfortunately, very revolutionary for that time, but it was just like, it's just so empowering. Like, I can't even.
Yeah, I know. It was such a good scene. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just loved it. I'm gonna put that inside the actor's studio.
Yeah. I'm sure there's stuff on there about Girl Interrupted as well.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
And then in that article that I was reading through Screen Slate, which we'll put in the show notes, the director says, so we offered Angelina the role and she turned it down. I asked her if she would please just meet with me before making her decision. So we met in a coffee shop on Wilshire and she came in with a bunch of switchblades and put them on the table and said, so I'm trying to decide which kind of switchblade legs would carry. And which is like such a 90s Angelina Jolie mood.
Yeah, absolutely. Here for
it. Yeah, like I can absolutely picture it. Like, huh? Yeah, well, people are like, yeah, she
auditioned for Goldie, apparently.
Oh my God, that would have been such a different movie.
It would have.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she has like main character energy. Like, she's
definitely. And that's why we're here in the world of
Yeah, so I like fucking love this movie. It's one of those ones that honestly I was like, I had it starred on our kind of spreadsheet as like a maybe because I didn't think it was gay enough because it wasn't like explicit, but then like it is really like extremely queer and like I can't believe I ever second guessed myself.
Yeah. Never second guess yourself. I was right. The other thing too is that the director herself in that interview with Autostraddle, it's super long, she was talking about her own experience because she is queer. She was in a really long relationship with a woman that she called her first marriage, even though they weren't married because gay marriage wasn't legal, but also I don't know if they would have done it, but anyways, it was a long committed relationship. And then she said that it was very costly to be an out queer woman. Like her family, she became estranged from some of her family. And because she also is attracted to men, she said she struggles with labels like bi and pan, but she likes the word queer. That she just kind of she wasn't loud about it when she married her husband. Had kids, and so everyone just assumed that she was straight. And then her son came out to her as gay when he was 13, and she was like, oh, and so she like told him about like the fact that she also wasn't straight, and it just was like, wow, that's cool. But
yeah,
after this movie was made, she had such trouble getting more directing gigs, and I guess I didn't realize the extent to which even today, because this interview is from March of this year. Even today in Hollywood, like the number of women directors is so small. And the number of women directors who get a second film, like with a big budget, is even smaller. And the interviewer was like, I keep thinking about, it's like Drew from Autostraddle. I don't know if you read any.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they were like, I keep thinking about how all these celebrities, especially really famous men like Leonardo DiCaprio and Ryan Gosling and all these people like worked with women when they were coming up and got their first shot in films directed by women and then like never worked with a woman director again. And she was like, yes, that's true, but I think it's less a reflection on the individual actors than the fact that women don't get big projects and they're looking for big projects. And I was like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Wow. Yeah, there's so much politics within that industry that I don't know anything about. And
I really only read from this one interview, but it seems really wild.
And it seems like it's permeated through all sorts of areas within the entertainment industry. We're hearing a lot from like the writers during their striking and things like that, like their experience
and exploitative and so biased in so many ways. She didn't direct another film until like 2013 or something, when she did this movie that she said she was not very happy with. It's called Savannah. And she said she wrote the script, but that she was forced to make a lot of changes and she didn't really like it, but it exists. But she said she's working on a screenplay now that she's been working on for years, and it has a soft attachment to, I think, Hari Neff, who's a trans actress. And it's about a trans woman, and I don't know, I mean, it's not made yet and there's like no hard dates on it or anything, but it was cast in a favorable light in this Autostraddle interview, so I'd be excited to see, like, hopefully that comes to life when it's good.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just looking at her stuff and I was trying to see, you know, if I had known anything else that she was in.
It seems like
or that really she had directed.
Doing gig stuff, like being a writer for hire, doing script supervision. Like, she's worked on a lot of things, but she hasn't like been high up in any of the projects that she's been on.
Yeah, that's such a bummer, because I'm sure, it's a team, but she did such a fantastic job with this movie that like I would love to see other ones like it, because I feel like this shit was like revolutionary and I still love it today. And it wasn't even like that nostalgic for me, but it's just like, I think it's fantastic. So and lots of fun like bonus content too. I feel like it does have a lot of like history, which is good.
I'm really glad that you've had us watch this movie. Thanks, Alicia.
Sometimes I'm pushy for the right reasons.
I wouldn't describe you as pushy, but I'm glad that you suggested it. I'm glad I got over my initial hesitation. I really liked it.
I think every single movie we watch on this, we have a little bit of hesitation That it's healthy amount of hesitation, right?
Yeah.
We're watching this like with a pretty critical eye, so that's fair.
Yeah.
So anyway, if you want to tell us, listener, your thoughts, you can email us at galpalswatch@gmail.com.
And I believe our only social media now is Instagram, which is at galpalswatch.
Yes, we have got rid of Twitter, as we have been talking about for like months now, but we finally pulled the plug. We were using this really cool applet called If This Then That, IFTTT, and basically they were making it so if you wanted to go from Instagram to Twitter, you had to pay, and I was like, don't want to do that. So we are just gonna cut ties. So
Twitter's on its way out anyway.
I'm not unhappy about it.
No, me either. I'm sorry if you are, but listener, but I think you'll be okay.
You'll survive. Just join us on Instagram. It's where the funny shit is.
It is. Alicia does a great job.
Yeah. Thank you. And as always, keep it Ella Gay. I just hear better, more better.
More better?
I hear more better when the sound is next to my ears.